It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
He was licking me.
What?
He was licking me!
Lunch Hour Reviews.
This man ate until he burst.
So he did die by eating.
Lunch Hour Reviews.
I'm tainting me.
Tainting me!
It's feeding time.
I'm Darren.
And I'm Mindy, and we are the Rance Macabre, a part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of the Rance Macabre, please visit fangoria.com.
So we're back with our American Horror Story breakdowns.
Yeah, you had to do it. You can't just skip over one of the seasons.
Yeah, this will just be the one episode, thank God.
Yeah, we're not
splitting this into two epic pieces.
Because I don't want to talk about this at all.
No, it doesn't really bear that much attention.
No.
Yeah, but we're talking about season 3, Coven of American Horror Story, created by Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk. This was the lame one. It's always strange to hear people say that, like, oh yeah, no, I really like the witch season.
I always give people a side eye when they do that because, and so many people, you know, they find out that I do the show and different things and they're like, oh, you know what? I love horror too. I watched American Horror Story Coven and I just loved it. And I go, fucking great. You know, like instantly I just discount your opinions.
Yeah, this is by far the weakest link of the series.
I don't get it. And watching it again, like, I thought maybe I would get what someone's telling me.
I think okay, for as little as I relate or understand the appeal of, like, the Twilight series.
I kind of
see that in this.
It doesn't even have that for me either, though.
Okay, but if this was...
Because I love Vampire Diaries.
A novelization... Oh, you do? Oh,
Vampire Diaries? Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was like a really guilty pleasure for you.
Well, I mean, yes, it is, but I still enjoy it, and I will admit that I enjoy it.
But there's nothing to this that you enjoy, even with guilt.
You know, what I would say about this, if I had to pick, you know, something nice to say about it, I think the one nice thing I could say is that it was beautifully filmed.
It's a great-looking show.
Beautiful. Each one is set up like a fashion show.
Yeah, and this season, following Asylum, which still used a little bit of shaky editing, blurry editing, this one is far more paced and designed. It's one of my notes that later in the season, it feels like there's a little bit of a transition to what looked like a Terry Gilliam film at times, so in terms of like his use of wide angle lenses and these sort of inversion shots. So it all suits, you know, what is a great looking show.
And yeah, it looks beautiful.
It's very stripped down. Like even for this, it's a plantation house in New Orleans. There's not a lot of furniture. And with the exception of the portraits on the ground floor, there's not a lot decorating this home.
It's just big open rooms.
Yeah. And we were talking before about whether or not this was... There's definitely exterior shots done in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. But the interiors, I expect, are all a film set, just to sort of give the camera as much maneuverability. I think it was all built. But okay, so let's jump in. This season is one part X-Men, though exclusively girls with gifts, coming to a school for the gifted. And then it's kind of Harry Potter meets Twilight, but not nearly enough of the craft.
No. They could have totally done some craft thing because I loved that. I think I would love that, you know.
Yeah. The craft has this great through line of, like, discovery and self-discovery. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to talk a little bit later about, like, these coming-of-age stories and, frankly, movies and stories that did it way better. But the craft, you know, has this great element of discovery where these girls are figuring out what they're capable of and tapping into something special. And, you know, in their case, I think they call it, like, Manu. Or, you know, they invent the thing. But it's essentially
magic.
Gaia. It's the earthy Wicca sort of
magic with a K.
Base. Magic with a K. So from the very beginning, all the girls have specific gifts, but they're not exclusive to witchcraft, and this dynamic is one of my biggest frustrations with the show. So we've got Gabourey Sidibe as Queenie, who is a human voodoo doll, so she can inflict harm on herself and in fact, comes away unharmed but hurts another person.
Which
who
is
she
a cool,
sort of
that's
aims
a cool idea.
I hadn't seen it before.
Yeah, no, that's a very cool idea.
Yeah. Let's see. We've got Thaisa Farmiga. She's sort of our ingenue. Am I using that word right?
Yeah, I think
she's
you would
the
use
one
that.
Entering the house, and it's through her eyes that we're experiencing all
right.
of this.
Now, she has the most, really one of the most ridiculous Ryan Murphy talents that there could be. Like, this is such a thing, like, Ryan Murphy was like, you know what would be great? She kills when people have sex with her. And it's just so stupid. I'm sorry. That's just the dumbest shit that I've ever heard of.
I will give it the credit that, in terms of the story, this aired in 2013. It Follows wouldn't come out to 2014. That said, the movie Teeth beat them to it. And so this idea of, like, killer sex, there's a lot worse ways I could put that. But in her case, yes, whoever has sex with her dies. She doesn't know why. She can't control it. All she knows is, yeah, she's
like a
got that going
sexy
for her.
Storm. Or not Storm. She's a sexy rogue. Is kind of the idea.
Yeah, I guess in theory, Rogue could actually do the same thing, just skin-on-skin contact.
Such, I don't know. It's so stupid. I don't know. I can't get past it.
And she's your least favorite in terms of actresses. And we saw her. She wasn't in season two, was she? She was the daughter in season one. And I think she's fine. I especially loved her in The Final Girls. But
yeah,
I guess it's not a high bar for me.
Yeah, it's not my... I just can't with that one. I just don't think she's that good. Her sister is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, her sister, great.
Vera Farmiga I've loved since, I think there's a Robert De Niro, Ed Burns movie called 15 Minutes, like 15 Minutes of Fame. And she plays, like, a Polish nail salon employee. And she's doing the full accent, since back then. Anyway, that's a completely random bit. It's just, that's my happy place. I go to
that's
Vera
the thing
Farmiga.
Is, like, it's so hard with Coven to stick with it. Like, stick with this episode even because you just want to talk about something that you actually enjoy.
Yeah, and the show itself is tonally erratic.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into that. But we're wrapping up some character stuff. So we get Emma Roberts, who I don't get the big fuss about.
Nope.
She's kind of playing slightly more witty, slightly more malicious, like Paris Hilton type.
Lindsay Lohan.
Except
I guess
I guess it's closer to Lindsay Lohan because
she's
is an actress.
Yeah.
But in her case, she's got a little bit of telekinesis going on. And she's playing Madison Montgomery, which I think is supposed to sound like a porn star name. But in any case, she's one of Ryan Murphy's darlings. She's also the star of Scream Queens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm a little unclear why anybody puts up with her. It seems like she's kind of a nightmare.
That is an interesting way to put it. Why does anyone put up with her? I don't know.
We get back Jamie Brewer, who was in the first season.
Right.
She's... In the first season, she plays Jessica Lange's daughter. Notably, she is the actress with Down syndrome. Here, she plays Nan, the psychic who's sort of regularly reading people's thoughts, against their
as
will.
As you do. Yeah. That's fine. Whatever. If you had that ability, she's probably the best character because if you had that ability, you would just do it. And you'd be like, yeah, I did that. What? And then that's how she kind of approaches the whole thing. What are you going to do about it?
So all these girls have collected at this school. We've already said Thaisa Farmiga is the last one there. I assumed it's the summer, and that's why there aren't classes happening, except there are because the college, all the students are around. There's a huge frat party. It's very well attended.
Yes.
So the school season's going. There's just no classes at this school for witches.
But it goes, hand in hand with this whole thing. The person who runs this school is Sarah Paulson's character, Cordelia Fox, and she is the daughter of the Supreme Witch, which is Jessica Lange. We'll get into it. I would never trust my children with Cordelia Fox because she is never paying attention to what's going on.
No.
And it's happening under her own roof. This is all one house.
In her greenhouse, which is part of the house, but still doesn't matter. She's not paying any attention.
Nothing ever, like, she never knows what's going on in another room. And literally in scenes later on in the show, she's upstairs in bed. And I don't know, there's a whole bunch of zombies attacking the house. There's a minotaur. There's a lot of things going on.
She's
and
wiping
just,
sleep out of her eyes. She's like, what I missed?
She's like, I'm asleep up here. This is happening right outside your window. Like, I don't know. The whole thing, nothing makes sense. So to say, like, are they in school because they don't attend classes? What? Of course not. She's terrible. She's a terrible headmistress.
Miss Robichaux's Academy for Exceptional Young Ladies was established as a premier girls' finishing school in 1790. During the Civil War, it was converted into a military hospital. Afterwards, it came under new management. Our management. In 1868, Marion Wharton, a prominent East Coast society matron, early suffragette, author of several popular children's books, and as it happened, the reigning supreme of that time, purchased this facility, retaining the name as a cover, establishing a safe haven where young witches could gather to learn. In its heyday, the academy was home to as many as 60 girls. Over the years, those numbers dwindled.
Why?
We're a dying breed, Zoe. Many of the families who knew they carried the bloodline made a choice not to reproduce.
So what's a supreme?
An average witch is born with a few natural gifts. But in each generation, there is one woman who embodies countless gifts. Some say all of them. She is the supreme.
So you mentioned Jessica Lange is the supreme. I don't know that that's a title I've ever heard come up in any other stories about witchcraft.
No.
But it sounds good.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's
great.
You know, it's the peak. It's the height. It's the apex of witchcraft is the supreme.
Fine. Great.
And I guess there's only one every generation.
Right.
And they kind of, when one supreme dies away, I guess, the next one sort of inherits that power and becomes more powerful. So Jessica Lange is fighting against the darkness with all she's got. She's even broken down to consulting with science. And so that first episode plays a lot with, I guess, funding she's put into, like, stem cell research and, like, cutting
edge.
She's
looking for eternal life.
Yeah. It turns out there's no saving her. It's just a downward roller coaster, and she's bitter about it.
Mm-hmm.
And from the get-go, and there aren't a lot of character arcs in this season, and so of, like, the myriad things to be frustrated with is that Jessica Lange, who is supposed to be the ultimate badass, you know, she's beyond learning any lessons. She's not softening, really.
No.
If she does seem to ingratiate herself with anybody, it's purely for self-interest.
Mm-hmm. And they also seem to know it, too. She, for a while, becomes buddies with Angela Bassett.
Yeah.
But Angela Bassett knows that she's being used, and no one seems to care. No one at all cares
what's
going on.
There's a lot of looking the other way.
Yeah, they're like, oh, okay, because it serves this particular plot of this episode this time right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, the character motivations, however, are completely left by the wayside.
Yeah.
You mentioned Angela Bassett. She's playing Marie Laveau, who was an actual human being who
right.
lived in New Orleans several hundred years ago. But this is where it gets interesting. This is where it's most frustrating because it seems the show missed a number of opportunities having to, like, squeeze in these teeny bopper subplots.
Mm-hmm.
But Marie Laveau, well, let's jump into voodoo specifically, because the show does kind of split down the middle between, you know, your sort of modern television witches and the tradition of voodoo and that sort of dark magic. Voodoo seems to have originated, I found at least three different names that it went over, mm-hmm. went under when it was still on the African continent. So it stems from Western Africa. And when the slave trade began in the 16 and 1700s, there were two different sort of flights. There was the people who were, well, there were the slaves who were brought originally to New Orleans, and then there were the slaves who were first brought to Haiti to
okay.
work. And it seems voodoo was the consistent between those two. The slaves who were brought to Haiti, a lot of them were introduced to Christianity. The slave masters and the white people in charge, in this case the French, were terrified by the rituals, the sort
sure.
of dancing, the chanting. They didn't know what was up. And, you know, the moment any group seems to show, like, a binding ideology, that's mm-hmm. terrifying. Because,
sure.
you know, I mean, just knowing that they're speaking a language that you don't speak, you know, slave masters are generally in the minority, and they're only maintaining power by being, like, viciously cruel and, you know, being weaponized as well. But so, in different spots, they completely banned religion. In Haiti, they started blending Christianity with their own
right.
original beliefs. And so there's a really
that's kind of the American idea, I think, of voodoo that we think of now, is
yeah.
this combination of Christianity and voodoo.
Yeah. And in their way, they Almost in the way that, like, the Romans adapted Greek myths and just changed names. In the Voodoo tradition, they actually changed over, say, like, St. Peter. They applied a different name to him, but he was still the man at the gates sort of deciding who comes and goes.
Uh-huh.
And so it is a very American thing to sort of, like, blend beliefs with your own thing. And so by the time they were brought to New Orleans, they had created their own sort of, well, faith.
Mm-hmm.
And even present day, voodoo is acknowledged as a faith. It's one of the minority faiths, but it's there. And so it's found its home in New Orleans primarily. There are pockets here and there in Florida. It seems to be wherever, say, like, traditional Haitian migration mm-hmm. arrives, that's kind of where you find pockets of voodoo. Going back to Marie Laveau, being born in Louisiana and being, like, original Creole, it's worth mentioning that in 2 years, New Orleans will be celebrating its 300th anniversary. So as one of the oldest American cities, it's just through and through this blending of cultures.
Right.
And so, you know, the French arrived, and then it was sold over in the era of Andrew Jackson. It's a bizarre sort of culmination of cultures, and that voodoo is at the heart of it is fascinating. But the show doesn't go into very much of that.
No, it doesn't at all.
And it kind of, they do like the TV version of voodoo,
mm-hmm.
Which we'll even talk about a movie that does it better. But in this case, so Marie Laveau is a fascinating person because she was kind of known for being a crank, but she was someone who could get shit done, like on the sly. And one of the things she liked to do was to forecast natural disasters.
Okay.
And being kind of, like I said, she was not known for being friendly. I guess upon her deathbed, when she saw it coming, she said that when I die, it's all going away. And on her funeral, there was a massive storm, and everybody who attended her funeral died.
Damn.
It was bad.
Wow.
So that character, to think of her as this eternal character who then resurrects in American Horror Story Coven,
mm-hmm.
again, seems like a missed opportunity.
Right.
And also, like, not for, I love seeing Angela Bassett, and I think it's actually quite poignant to play her as an immortal because she, I mean, we've already talked about her in the hotel season,
right.
but, like, that is a woman who doesn't age. Like,
no,
go back and watch What's Love Got to Do with It. She
and it
hasn't
was kind
aged
of
today.
Like, at this point in time when we saw Angela Bassett, when this came out on TV, we hadn't really seen her recently at that time.
Yeah, yeah, I guess.
And she just came out of nowhere, and she was so beautiful. I remember just thinking, like, where has Angela Bassett been?
And she was someone who was primarily a film star. She had not done, I don't think, any television, really, except for maybe a guest spot here and there. But, yeah, that she came back to American Horror Story with full force is great. I just wish they had given her more to do.
Absolutely.
That said, her hair salon, where she kind of, you mm-hmm. know, spends her days, she's sort of returned to that like community center point. And so people come to her with problems, and she does her best to solve them, you know, just ask a price or a favor and whatnot.
She's like the voodoo godfather.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that at least is a person with a purpose. This school for witches seems to be like, I don't know, one of these colleges that, like, doesn't have accreditation, that's just like, did I just spend 4 years on an undergrad degree that's worthless? Like,
yeah,
what do I do with
this
now?
They never go to
class.
They never learn anything.
They don't. And even if they did, what are they? They teach more witches to go on and be witches.
Yeah.
Maybe
you should learn to read. Do that first.
The closest we get to having a purpose is that they are prey, that they are hunted by witch hunters.
Right, because there's some stupid witch hunter story going along, too. That's so stupid.
It doesn't serve any purpose. Like, they don't overcome a great adversary. Like, it just all kind of, they're all peripheral stories. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
And incidentally,
nothing has
I did
to do with anything.
Recognize that the consigliere for the, like, Empire company that is actually responsible for witch hunting, that actor is playing Luke Cage in Netflix's Luke Cage show from Marvel.
I've seen him in so many things.
Dude, this is the first time I've seen him
I've seen him.
American Horror Story. Or, well, rather,
well, I guess, yeah,
the trailers.
American Horror Story.
So Marie Laveau is not the only immortal. She has an adversary who, I mean, really, the other side of that spectrum in terms of, like, the slave experience is Kathy Bates' character.
Yeah, and Kathy Bates is... this is another totally missed opportunity. Kathy Bates is playing Delphine LaLaurie. And there actually was a Delphine LaLaurie in New Orleans.
Yeah, I think in the show they even take us on a tour of her residence.
House. Yes, yeah. And her house was burnt down in a fire, which I'll explain why. but then they rebuilt it, and actually, strangely enough, Nicolas Cage bought it a few years ago.
Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah, I know. Why would you buy that? Why, Nicolas Cage,
also,
would you buy
save
that?
Also, save your money, Nicolas Cage.
Well, he ended up selling it.
Maybe do fewer movies every year.
Yeah, right. He ended up selling it. It was when he was buying up a bunch of historical shit, remember?
Yeah. And, yeah, big comic book guy. I can't fault him for the comic book collection, but, like, when he's buying rare skulls and shit like that, it's like, deal with your tax problem.
Yeah,
first.
Calm down, Nicolas Cage. But LaLaurie lived in the 1800s in New Orleans, and she was a slave owner. And New Orleans was an interesting slave culture in that there were very strict rules about keeping slaves on the books.
Okay.
However, it looked to be very not beneficial, but it looked to be like, oh, this is looking out for the well-being of the slaves, but at the end of the day, they were still slaves. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
On paper, it made it look like, oh, but we care for their well-being. So the LaLauries, the family had actually been in trouble before because a little girl slave had gotten kicked off, or, like, forced to jump out of the roof of the house.
Oh.
Out of the top window. And she fell to her death and died. And someone called the police on LaLaurie because she was chasing her around with a whip through the top of the house.
Yikes.
The girl ended up jumping off and dying. So at that point in time, that was in 1833, LaLauries had to give up all their slaves. They only had about 8 at that particular time.
Okay.
So they were forced by the police to give them all up. So they did, but then they had a friend just buy them back. Then they acquired more slaves. And by 1834... there was a fire in the LaLaurie house. Now, this had been going on with complaints with the police and slaves, things like that, rumors all throughout New Orleans, because LaLaurie was actually her uncle was the mayor of New Orleans.
Yeah, that's useful.
Exactly. So this had been going on for a while, all these rumors. There's a huge fire then in 1834 in the LaLaurie house, and the firemen come and the police come, and what they find is the cook chained to the stove had set the fire because she'd rather commit suicide than live with LaLaurie. And when they went into the house, they go up into the attic, very similar to how they show on the show.
Yeah.
And there were 7 or 8 slaves chained by their necks. And this is by the accounts of the newspaper in New Orleans in the 1834. So they're chained by their necks. Their arms are kind of torn and stretched. And it appeared like she was experimenting on them. And this is all in the newspaper in 1834, because you know how old newspapers used to tell you the most graphic shit.
Yeah.
That was when they discovered what was going on there, and LaLaurie said, I'm gonna peace out, and she literally walked out the front door. No one stopped her, and her husband ended up going on to France.
Really? That she lived out the rest of her life in France?
Yeah. And then what they did with the slaves that they found was really fucked up. They actually took them to the local jail and put them on display so that all the other people could come by and see how mistreated they were and how wrong it was to mistreat people. So in the jail in New Orleans, these people were still chained up in this jail so that everyone could come and see. And they said that they had almost 2,000 people come in and see this almost exhibition.
It's not bad enough to be tortured, but to be made
now
a
you're
display.
On display. Ugh. To just show how bad it was.
Wow, and she got away scot-free. Well,
yeah.
I'll say I appreciate the sort of karmic balance that the show finds in the sort of fictional version where Angela Bassett rolls up and buries her alive. Oh, well, we should talk about her sort of... LaLaurie is obsessed with youth, seemingly, you know, a couple decades too late, but
yes.
I won't begrudge her that. So dousing her face with the blood of those she's tortured... And it turns out there was more to it in terms of, like, promises made or voodoo spells, but she's eternal. She will never die. And Angela Bassett Marie Laveau does maybe the worst thing imaginable one could do to someone who cannot die. She buries her alive.
Right.
And so that happens, you know, seemingly at the turn of the century in the 1800s. And so she is under the ground for almost 300 years.
Just hanging out, being pissed off.
And, I mean, in all fairness, that would drive anyone insane. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a one-way flight into outer space
she
that
seems
you never...
like, the samely adjusted, though. She's the yeah. same as she was when she was put in there. She learned no lessons.
Yeah, they kind of play with the, you know, the sort of dynamic where she's having to come to terms with, like, we have a black president now.
Yeah.
And they TV. Have rights. And, yes, television's a thing. And so that's played for comedy, and Gabourey Zidibé has to sort of walk her through all these things and why it's horrible to be racist and your opinions need to change, or I don't know, or we're going to bury in the yard again.
It's stupid. It's half baked. And then at one point in time, her head gets cut off, and literally you're dealing with just Kathy Bates's head for a while on this show. It's the dumbest shit that's ever happened. It's like,
right,
oh, now it's her head.
Reanimator. Yeah.
Yeah. And this head is talking and being equally as annoying just as a head.
Yeah.
Ooh. You bring nibbles? I'm starving.
Girl, you ain't got no stomach. What are you going to do? Chew it and shit it out of your neck? Time for some sensitivity training.
What fresh hell is this?
Roots. The saga of an American family. You are going to watch all 8 hours of it, followed by the sequel, Roots, The Next Generation.
Why didn't you just throw my head in that fire pit? I want to die. I'm ready.
Believe me, I'd love nothing more than to melt your ugly face right off your skull, but you are ignorant, and you are not leaving this earth until I educate you about those people you tortured. My people.
So next door to the Witch Academy is Patti LuPone, and she's playing a devout Christian woman. Right. She has a very handsome, fetching young boy for a son, and all the girls swoon.
Right,
And I don't know, I'd talk about another waste of an opportunity that Patti LuPone, you know, she's a familiar name. It's because she's like a multi-Tony winner.
I was so excited when I saw she was going to be in the season.
And the only time she sings is to her son, and it's at a time of tragedy, so, like, her voice is cracking.
Like,
it's not even...
No.
Like, they don't even make use of that.
Give me some Evita. That's what I wanted to hear. Just sing Evita. That, it was such a waste. We also have another wasted person, Mare Winningham, wasted.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, she's
role.
Cruel and terrible, but...
Yeah, and she's playing Evan Peters, who, again, is another wasted actor who, like, starts out the story as kind of a golden boy. He's trying to rein in his frat crew, but it turns out they're all drunken rapists.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, if this story had come out, if this season was the newest season, I wonder if they would have worked with the storylines a little differently, because his fucking creepy, drunken frat brothers gang rape... Emma Roberts' character, and we kind of move past it really fast.
Yeah, no one seems to dwell on it, least of all the victim.
Yeah.
She seems to just kill them and
call it a day. The way they play it is kind of like, that's not the first time she's passed out at a party and been taken advantage of. That's kind of her
attitude towards it. It's
very
cavalier, the whole thing.
It's really fucking icky. But in any case, Evan Peters' character suffers the brunt for what his frat brothers did. And is, well, they turn him into a Frankenstein. He's dead.
Yeah.
They reassemble him with all his, and I actually did like that storyline that he's not even all himself in terms of this reanimated corpse. He's got, like, the arm of one frat brother, the leg of another, and shit like that. And so, like, that's kind of a creepy idea. And I don't think it's ever been really covered in a Frankenstein story in terms of his relationship to the parts that make up the whole.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, that he was friends with all these guys is kind of creepy to, like, find that you are the amalgamation of all these other dudes.
Yeah, but he comes back and he's weird.
Yeah, he's kind of brain dead for the first... I mean, really, the, like, two-thirds of the season, he plays this, you know, simple sort of monster character. So there's not a lot for him to do. And even when he does sort of... he is given his brain back.
Mm-hmm.
Still nothing. Still simple and uninteresting. Just kind of
such
set
a waste.
Dressing.
Such a waste.
Yeah, yeah. Lily Robbie is back. She plays Misty Day, a sort of secluded swamp witch with particular powers of resurrection. Mm-hmm. She's obsessed with Stevie Nicks and Fleetwood Mac.
Which was funny at first. I thought, when I was watching it the first time, I thought, oh, this is really funny. And then it became not funny at all.
Yeah, it's kind of just enough, like, give us a sense of where she's basing her aesthetic.
Yeah.
That's plenty.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But then they invite...
Obsessing over it and then having...
Inviting Stevie Nicks onto
the show. Stevie Nicks show up for... She's in three different episodes.
It's just like... And it's only for music videos, it seems.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
just... I mean, never I don't
know. Never serves the story. It's just, again, another character is invited for set dressing and sing us a song.
Yeah, which I like Stevie Nicks as much as the next person, but it's like, that's nuts.
Yeah. Worth noting are some of the directors who worked on the series and this season in particular, but Alfonso Gomez Rayong, who also directed the meta sequel to The Town That Dreaded Sundown.
Mm-hmm.
I like that movie a lot. And he's original team Ryan Murphy. He's OG. He directed a bunch of episodes of Glee and a bunch of every season of American Horror Story, starting from the beginning. Also directing are James Wong, right. who directed Final Destination 1 and 3.
That's a big catch for Ryan Murphy, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Howard Deutsch, who did everything from Pretty in Pink, Some Kind of Wonderful, Aww. The Great Outdoors, with John Candy, that was a childhood favorite of mine, and a whole lot of television. So, like, they're in good hands. They just didn't have the story.
No, there was just everything. Yeah. Nothing makes sense. Much like Evan Peters is like put together in multiple pieces. That's how this is. And you know, I know that in Asylum, that's what everyone complained about. They said, "Oh, there's too many things. There's all this shit and aliens and all this stuff." But to me, Asylum worked. This is just all this shit and nothing makes sense. There's and no one knows what's going on stories. With the other people.
No. No.
You know, it's never one consistent story because everyone's just like, oh, that happened? Oh, I didn't even know. Oh, you were standing right next to me and this whole story unfolded? I actually didn't know that.
A few of the writers of note, Ryan Murphy, of course, mm-hmm. Tim Minear, who I talked about a lot in our hotel season conversation, Jennifer Salt, James Wong, and Jessica Scharzer. Yeah, again, like maybe it was the fault of the story editor, but none of these stories bind. There's no gel gluing any of this stuff together. So it's kind of a tonal mess. If I had to guess, I think Scream Queens probably went into production or was at least in the early stages of planning, and so Tim Minear had less control and maybe less direct writing. Because, I mean, there's plenty of writers, and they're all familiar, but they're so inconsistent between the shows. There was one that stood out relatively early in the Marie Laveau versus Jessica Lange. Her last name's Good. I can't remember which one she is.
Fiona.
She's Fiona Good. Almost sounds like Feel Good. That's got to be on purpose.
Okay.
But so they're friends, they're enemies, they're friends, they're enemies. At a point where early on they're enemies, Marie Laveau sends a zombie attack on the House of Witchcraft on the school. And it's kind of neat in terms of like, hey, zombie invasion in an American horror story. But it's so dumb. They're a combination of like voodoo spell zombies and the tradition of like the white zombie with Bela Lugosi.
But then also just real like dead people.
Yeah, the undead. And not just the undead, but there's literally a flapper girl amongst the dead. I don't know.
And like even two of Delphine's daughters are out there.
Yeah.
Like.
And pretty well composed for 200-year-old
dead women. It just goes hand in hand with the dumbness that goes on here.
And as if to like cap it off, it becomes an Evil Dead homage where Thaisa Farmiga's character is sporting a chainsaw and is just like whipping these ladies and men in half. And it like tonally changes to some like jokey thing. It's just, it's so dumb.
I know when people tell me they like this, they do say like, oh, I liked this coven because it was so funny. And
funny?
Like, I don't think it's funny, but the people who like it tell me it's funny.
That's the first I've heard funny.
Yeah, that's when I ask people like why, because it was funny.
Do they mean stupid?
I don't know.
Like dumb enough they can laugh at it? Because maybe. That it is, this episode maybe in that's particular. What
they just tell me it's funny, and then I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's like a terrible secret, like that you don't want to find out from your friends, you know?
I'm quietly judging you.
Exactly. You're like, I don't really want to find out anymore about this from you.
So one of the voodoo elements that was sort of glossed over because it was very quick, but Angela Bassett as Marie Laveau blows powder into a nurse's face to just get her to like cooperate and go away.
Right, right.
And apparently like there's history to that. And actually lately it's been coming up in the news because there is a Colombian extract of a tree that also has this effect where it sort of renders people incapable of like refusing. It's like a date rape drug kind okay. of. But a powder, and I don't know, it's referred to as Bacor. And I don't know, I thought it was cool, but most effectively it was shown in the movie The Serpent and the Rainbow with yeah. Bill Pullman?
Pullman.
I think it's Pullman. This is a president from Independence Day. Pullman, okay. Right?
I don't know.
Yeah, but yes. Serpent and the Rainbow is a much better movie.
Yeah, Serpent and the Rainbow is great. I accidentally watch it once a year with my husband.
Accidentally? You yeah. forget you've seen it?
No, I know I've seen it. My husband forgets that we've seen it, and he always wants to see it. He's like, oh, Serpent and the Rainbow, I've heard good things. Yes, because you've said them. And every time I go, we've seen that, and he goes, I don't remember it. Okay, so like once a year probably.
Once a year this. Someone's blowing this powder in his face and telling him, forget you've seen this movie.
I should really watch out. He has like a head injury or something.
But yeah, it's Wes Craven, right? He directed it. It's based on a true story, but you've got other better voodoo stories as well, right?
I don't have voodoo stories. For me, what I had for this is like, listen, if you don't want to waste your time watching this show, but you want to know about witches and have a good time
okay.
with witches, I would suggest 1990s Roald Dahl, The Witches.
Okay.
Because I love that movie and it's really good and there's some scary witches. You could just, I don't know, watch 2015's The Witch, which was fucking awesome
yeah,
if you want to learn about
witches.
That's a
great, witches. Yeah, yeah, we've talked about it on this podcast. It's a great, like, establishing witch story, especially yeah. that it's distilled not just before but 30 years before the Salem witch trials.
Exactly.
But like it's some of the like original American folklore.
So if I want to get my witch fix in, that's what I would do. But then for my friends who are like, oh, but Coven is funny, and I still am side-eyeing that because I just totally don't get it. If you want a funny witch story, I would take 1993's Hocus Pocus over this. I would watch Hocus Pocus like
Streisand?
12 times instead of this. No, Barbara Streisand. Bette Midler. Get
Bette
with
Midler,
it.
My mistake. Barbara Streisand wouldn't lower herself to.
But that's what I would suggest. You know, if you want to learn about witches and have a good time and not watch this garbage, watch those instead.
So as the season wraps up, it's still not done anything.
No.
They've replaced the Supreme. They've thwarted this corporation in the easiest witch defensive move in this whole series.
The voodoo people have nothing to do with anything.
No, they've been removed from the equation.
Yeah, Delphine has nothing to do with anything. Patti LuPone has nothing to do with anything.
No.
We are back to where we started and could have never had any of the middle.
Except the school is now very public. And it's funny that Sarah Paulson's characters in all these series wind up as a TV personality.
It's true.
And in this case, she is the representative. They're going public. They are announcing that witchcraft is a real thing, and all women who think they have special abilities should come to New Orleans and discover themselves and their abilities. And still, there's no end game. It's just like,
nope.
All right, it's an American Hogwarts in New Orleans, but other than that, like, all right, you're a witch who can practice banking. Like, it's like there's no...
This is really stupid. Yeah.
Yeah, they're not even crime fighters or anything. They could be the next Avengers, just a whole team of Scarlet Witches, but
the
no.
The whole show could have happened, and yet nothing happened, and none of the things had to happen for this to happen, because Sarah Paulson could have just spoke out in the very beginning.
Yeah, or he'd done a better job as, like, a public face to the school.
Yeah,
they're so concerned about being cast out of society, and, you know, they don't want the limelight, because it's famously always ended poorly.
Oh, another story that didn't go anywhere was that Axeman story. Totally even forgot that was even part of the show until I started watching that episode. And I was like, oh, I totally forgot about you.
I think it's Danny Houston plays the Axeman.
I like him.
The spirit. He's great. He was especially good in
Freak Show. Yeah.
And I think he was underused there. But here, he's Jessica Lange's sort of
love interest,
sort of ghostly boyfriend.
Yeah.
But oof, like just in terms of missed opportunity, like he's a serial killer from the 50s who, I guess, is given new form in the modern day.
Right, because they're playing with a Ouija board. It doesn't matter. It's stupid. And that's another story, though, that had nothing to do with anything.
No.
If Sarah Paulson had just gone to the TV right away, this all would have been fine.
That's why I love to believe about supernatural stuff, but like, I don't know, just be public about it. Let us know. Is this shit real?
Exactly.
Because you could be saving a lot of people a lot of headaches.
Exactly.
But so that'll wrap it up for this awful season. Hopefully this edits tightly and you can move on with your day and never think about American Horror Story season Coven.
If I edited it the way that this show was edited, I would just have a whole bunch of non sequiturs, but then at the end, I would just probably have our opening again. As always, be sure to check us out on social media. We are on Twitter at Rants Macabre. We are on Facebook at The Rants Macabre. We have a Gmail, therantsmacabre@gmail.com. Check out our website. We have extra stuff. Darren always puts extra stuff and makes it look all fancy over there at www.therantsmacabre.com.
Our Patreon page is patreon.com/rantsmacabre, where recently we put up an extra scene, well, that we wrote and performed ourselves, from our Wicker Man episode, our Small Town Horror, where, yeah, I don't know, it's good. You should check it out.
I think we're funny.
That one will be public for everybody. Don't tell anybody. Just, you know, be inspired to join us on Patreon and contribute and try and keep this show afloat. You've been listening to The Rants Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario, that's me, and Thomas DeFeo, and executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rants Macabre, contact Ken at fangoria.com. This is me, Darren, signing off.
And this is Mindy. Thanks. 7-1.